Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone, once again to Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, John A. Geffey. Doing things a little bit different today. We're testing out some things. We're trying some new things here. We are working on our first test run of videotaping our show so we can post that to our YouTube channel. Remember, this is all going to be connected to our church website for our Father's House NC, for our Father's House Ministries, which is what we are founding and what we are starting. So I want to welcome everyone here today on a Sunday afternoon. We've had a lot of rain here in the Carolinas. Fortunately, God spared us Hurricane Joaquin, but here we are. And so what we wanted to talk about today is an event that happened during the Last Supper when Jesus spoke to the disciples, and he was speaking to them during that Last Supper, and he foretold his own betrayal. And the story of that, we find it in a couple of places. We find it in Luke and in John. We're going to look at the Luke version first. And in Luke, Jesus foretells of his own betrayal. And in John, he tells of his own betrayal. And these are two different stories. There are two different betrayals that Jesus is going to talk about here. And one of them is directed at Simon Peter. Peter is the apostle who walked on water. Peter later founded the Roman church, known as the first bishop of Rome. Very important to Catholicism. He is the fisherman. He's one of the fishermen who Jesus called to follow him. I like Peter a whole lot. He's one of my favorite disciples for a lot of different reasons. But Jesus calls him out here at this Last Supper. And in John, we're going to look at how Jesus foretells of his betrayal and the reaction that the disciples had at that time when he calls them out. So let's first talk about Peter. In Luke chapter 22, verse 31, and the Lord said, Simon, Simon, talking to Simon Peter, behold, Satan hath desired to have you, that he may sift you as wheat. But I have prayed for thee, that thy faith fail not. And when thou art converted, strengthen thy brethren. And he said unto him, Lord, I am ready to go with thee, both into prison and to death. And he said, Jesus, speaking about Jesus, Jesus said, I tell thee, Peter, the cock shall not crow this day before that thou shalt thrice deny that thou knowest me. So Jesus is predicting that Peter, for all his arrogance and all his boastfulness, is going to deny him. And to deny someone is a type of betrayal. This haunts Peter, I think. You know, when we think about the real effects of the disciples and the real emotions, one of the things that comes to mind is how very human they were. Peter loved Jesus with all his heart, and he wanted to be faithful to him. He wanted to be someone that Jesus could count on. In the Garden of Gethsemane, when they come to take Jesus, Peter, despite what Jesus says here, Peter pulls out a sword. He takes a sword, and he's ready to fight and to give his life for Jesus Christ right then and there. But that wasn't what Jesus wanted him to do. When we look and see what Jesus is really saying here, Peter boasts of his fidelity, his faithfulness to Jesus. He says, Jesus, I'll go to prison for you. I will die for you. Jesus humbles Peter, not in a mean way, but to remind us that spirit is willing, the flesh is weak. He says, "You'll deny me three times before morning. Before the sun comes up in the morning, you will deny me three times." And that's very true. That's what happened. It didn't mean that Peter didn't love Jesus. It didn't mean that Peter wasn't ultimately faithful to Jesus. It was a way for Jesus to remind Peter, you're human. You're going to make mistakes. You can't boast of these things. You can't boast like this. You need to be aware of your limitations. We look at how Peter reacts. He reacts in the garden by pulling a sword, by showing commitment, but of not the kind of commitment that Jesus was looking for. Because Jesus says, those who die, who live by the sword shall die by the sword. And he ended up healing the Roman soldier that Peter injured with his sword. So for Jesus, he doesn't want us to pay our lip service to him in terms of fidelity. He wants us to show it, to act it out, be faithful rather than to say we're faithful. That was critical for him. He also, it's about being a follower instead of being a fan. There's a very famous series called the Not a Fan series that refers to being followers of Jesus instead of being fans. So Jesus wants you to be a follower. He doesn't want you to be a fan. He doesn't want to hear how you're ready to go for prison, go to prison for him, how you're ready to die for him, how you're ready to do this for him or do that for him. He wants you to do it. He wants you to hear his commandments, and he wants you to go execute them. And you see, Peter's reaction is one of stupefaction. Luke doesn't record Peter's reaction right there at that moment, but we can imagine it. We can imagine that it shut him up and set him down, quite frankly, because that's pretty harsh. When, you know, one of the leading disciples stands up and says, Lord, I'm ready to go to prison for you, I'm ready to die for you, and Jesus himself puts him in his place and says, Peter, easy, hold on. Before the sun comes up, you're going to deny me three times. I don't think Jesus was being sarcastic about that. I think that Jesus was trying to teach Peter a lesson and teach the others a lesson to show them, Peter, before the cock crows, you're going to deny me three times. Jesus is trying to reach out to him. And Peter's reaction is one of silence and one of introspection, I believe. It made him think, why? Why would Jesus say that? And it might, I don't have any biblical evidence for this, but it may have actually fueled his actions in the garden. When the Roman soldiers come for Jesus, maybe Peter's going to say, well, I'm going to show Jesus that I'm not going to deny him. And he does something foolish. And he acts rashly because Peter is acting on his thoughts. You see, he's not doing what Jesus wants him to do. He's not doing what Jesus has asked him to do. He's doing what Peter thinks is best. And even though his intentions are really good, the actions are not the will of the Father. They're the will of Peter. We get into that as Christians sometimes. We fall into that trap where we have a really great idea, a really positive idea, something that we think is going to work and it's going to be helpful to our fellow man, helpful to building the kingdom. And so we want to get out there and we want to execute that idea. But we don't stop and ask, God, is this the idea that you have? Is this the plan that you have? We don't put forth to Jesus our plan and say, guide me. Or better yet, we don't go to him and say, God, you instruct me. You tell me what you want me to do. So for Peter, the idea of Peter being a betrayer and as someone who would deny Jesus, it was enough to cause him to sit and to stop and have to think and reflect. Now, when we go to John, chapter 13. John is a very interesting book because John talks about the ministry of Jesus, but in a different way than the Synoptic Gospels, the Matthew, Mark, and Luke. He's not trying to give a real historical account. He spends over half his book talking about the last days of Jesus because John's writing at a time when he believes this is the critical message. This is what the people need to hear. So already by chapter 13, John is at the Last Supper, and he's describing the conversations going on. Now, in chapter 13, verse 37, we have that same story about Peter. Peter says unto him, Lord, why cannot I follow thee now? I will lay down my life for thy sake. Jesus has said that he's going to be going, and where he's going, they cannot follow. But that they would follow him afterwards. And so Peter, being the eager one, Peter trying to please, Peter, a real follower of Jesus, says, why can't I go with you now? I'm ready. I'm going to lay down my life for you. I'm ready to do this thing, Lord. I'll go wherever you go. I'll do whatever you tell me to do. I am committed to you. And Jesus answers him, as he did in Luke. In verse 38, Jesus answered him, wilt thou lay down thy life for my sake? Verily, verily, I say unto thee, the cock shall not crow till thou hast denied me thrice. So again, Jesus says, will you really lay down your life for me? Peter, in truth, that's that verily, verily. It's truly, truly I say to you, you're going to deny me three times before the sun comes up. Now, before this discussion with Peter, before Peter brings this up and Jesus has to speak to him and cause this reflection in Peter, you see, Peter's already had to think. He's already had his mind troubled by Jesus. You say, well, Jesus is the bringer of peace. How can he trouble the mind? Well, because here we are at the Last Supper. Here's the scene. Jesus is speaking with him. We go back in chapter 13 to verse 21. When Jesus had thus said, he was troubled in spirit and testified and said, verily, verily, I say unto you, that one of you shall betray me. That's a powerful statement. Imagine that you are with your organization. Imagine you're with your pastor, if you're a Christian. If you're not a Christian, imagine you're at your place of business. And you're the person that you look up to the most, the CEO, the person that you trust the most, is sitting at the table with you and you're having lunch with them, and they come up and they say, it is an absolute truth that one of you sitting at this table is going to betray me. Well, wow, what a major statement that would be. And especially coming from Jesus. Because that means the disciples will know it's truth. They can't say, no, that's not going to happen. And they don't. They utterly believe Jesus. And they know because Jesus has spoken it, it's going to happen. So let's look and see what they say. In verse 22 of John chapter 13, then the disciples looked one on another, doubting of whom he spoke. And what that means is, when they say doubting of whom he spoke, that means that they were looking at each other like, is it you? Did you do it? I bet it's Matthew. I bet it's Nathaniel. I bet it's Thaddeus. I wonder if it's Judas. Maybe it's me. Because you see, they were human beings. So their first reaction is to look at one another and cast blame. You see, that's a very human thing that we do. When we're confronted with the idea that there is evil in our midst, everyone except the guilty party wants to look around and say, well, I know it's not me. Who's it going to be? I know, I'm sure Peter thought, I know it's not going to be me who betrays Jesus. So who then is it? Which one of us is it? Surely the Master will tell us. Read further. Now there was leaning on Jesus' bosom one of his disciples whom Jesus loved. That is John. Anytime you hear the reference, the disciple whom Jesus loved, we're talking about John. Not John the Baptist, but John the Apostle. The writer of the book of John, the writer of 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John, the writer of Revelation. So he was there, and he was close to Jesus. So close that he could lean up to him. Peter, now here's Peter again. Peter is the one who takes action. Peter is the disciple who refuses to sit still, no matter what's going on. After Jesus fed the 5,000, the disciples get on a boat and head over to the Sea of Galilee at night. Storm comes up. They look out and they see a figure walking on the water toward them. They become incredibly afraid. All the disciples literally hit the deck. I imagine them looking over the side of the ship, you know, just their eyes peeking above the ship, scared very much to death of this figure approaching them, wondering, is it a ghost? Is it a banshee? Is it a, you know, some sort of creature of the night that they have to be afraid of? And only Peter has the courage to speak out and say, is it you, Lord? So Peter is always the man of action. He is always doing. Again, reminding you of Gethsemane. When they come for Jesus, the other apostles, some are even asleep. Others are standing there. Peter takes action. And that's one of the reasons I like Peter, is because Peter's not afraid. He's not afraid to act. He's not afraid to move. He's not afraid to do. So here, Peter, knowing that John is, that Jesus loves John, that Jesus cares about John, and I want to clarify something here right now. Jesus loved all of the disciples. He had a place in his heart for each and every one of them. He has a place in his heart for you. But as human, as a human person, he developed relationships. And his relationship with John was such that the others characterized it and characterized it in the way that they did, by saying that he was the one whom Jesus loved. So Peter beckons to John and says, or that he should ask who it should be of whom he spoke. And, you know, so Peter is sitting there and he's like, man, I can't stand this. I've got to know. I need to know who it is that's going to betray Jesus, possibly, so I can take care of it right now. And so I can, you know, move this person along, whichever one of these 11 guys it is that's going to betray Jesus, me and him are going to go have a come to Jesus meeting out in the parking lot when I find out who it is going to be the betrayer. I believe that's what Peter's intentions are. Peter wants to know because he's the man of action. He's the man of doing. Peter goes out, says, calls John over to him and says, John, come over here. John comes over and says, find out. Ask Jesus who this is. Find out who it's going to be so we can resolve this. Because you see, none of the disciples were without remorse. None of them were without sin. So every one of them would have had an internal monologue. Every one of them, after wondering which one of the others it was going to be, would have said, is it me? Is it I, Lord? Am I the one who's going to betray you? Because I am weak. And I am sure, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that the devil was there pushing those thoughts, pushing those ideas. Even to Judas by saying, see, he's found you out. You need to act on this. You need to get this thing resolved today. You need to go earn your money, son. You need to go betray him now. Judas will soon leave. To fulfill that, Jesus will send him out and say, go do what you need to do. So in verse 25 of John 13, John goes back to Jesus and says, he then, lying on Jesus' breast, says unto him, Lord, who is it? And Jesus answered, not directly. You see, and this is always a question that some people have. Why doesn't Jesus just call out Judas? And some people say, well, because it was necessary, because Judas had to betray him to fulfill prophecy. You know, Judas had to be the one to say, hey, this is, you know, Jesus. And if Jesus had called him out, the other disciples would have gotten mad and they would have kicked Judas out right then. May have killed him, may have murdered him, may have beat him up, may have prevented him in some way from betraying Jesus, which certainly makes sense, but I don't think that's why he does it. I think the reason that Jesus answers in the way he does, and let's look at that answer. Jesus answered, he it is to whom I shall give a sop when I have dipped it. And when he had dipped the sop, he gave it to Judas Iscariot, the son of Simon. And after the sop, Satan entered into him, Judas. Then said Jesus unto him, that thou doest, do it quickly. Now no man at the table knew for what intent he spoke this unto him, because Judas carried the money. So they're thinking that maybe Jesus is commanding him to go and give it to the poor, or go buy something for the feast, or to go prepare something, to go maybe purchase lodgings, something. They don't understand the meaning, but Judas does. So why doesn't Jesus say, well, it's Judas? He doesn't do that, I believe, because Jesus wanted to give Judas every opportunity. I believe that Jesus wanted to give Judas a chance to not be the betrayer. See, Jesus trusts his Father. He trusts the Father to accomplish everything that's going to be accomplished. Jesus knows what it is. Jesus is omniscient. He knows that it's Judas. But such is the hope of Jesus, that even while he is sitting next to him, and even as he names him, and even as he knows that Judas is the betrayer, he still has hope. He still wants Judas. He is still pursuing Judas. He is still wanting Judas to turn and not do this. Pursues you. He is pursuing Judas by not naming him, by giving him an opportunity to say no to Satan, by giving him an opportunity to say, Jesus, I love you and I'm not going to betray you. I'm not going to go out and commit this sin. I'm not going to go out and do this because I believe in you. Judas fails at that. But it's a measure of the hope of Jesus. And it's a measure of his love that he pursued his own betrayer. And if you're out there today and you're lost in sin and you think the devil's going to tell you, you're too bad. You've done too much. You've gotten too far away. Maybe you grew up in church. Maybe you know right from wrong. But you're too far gone. Jesus doesn't think so. Jesus didn't think that Judas was too far gone. He is right here trying to give Judas an opportunity. And he's giving you an opportunity. He is reaching out to you wherever you are, in whatever pit, whatever hole, whatever darkness that you are in. Jesus is right there with you. Judas, a lot of people say Judas was sitting at the left hand of Jesus. Judas was certainly so close that they were able, when it says giving him the sop, that means they were dipping their bread into oil to eat. Very tasty, and something they do at the feast. And to do it for one and to have someone take it from your hand would be very common. So when Jesus dips the sop, he's hoping that Judas doesn't take it. But Judas does. And then that's why I think that John includes that part about Satan entering into him. Because at that point, Satan had taken control of Judas. Judas had given in completely. Could Judas have been saved at that point? Absolutely. But it would have taken Judas rejecting Satan. It would have taken Judas saying no to Satan and yes to Jesus, which is what Jesus wanted. And so you see the betrayer. You see the betrayer, Judas, when we compare him to the denier, Peter. See, Peter was just trying to be confident in his faith, but he was only a person. He was only a man. Judas wasn't confident in Jesus at all, yet Jesus pursued him just as he humbled Peter. Think about these things today. Whether you're the Judas who is still lost, Jesus is still pursuing you. If you're Peter, if you're saved, think about the humility that Peter shows and that Jesus expresses to him. Tell someone about the Lord today. I'm your host, John A. Guffey, for FMG Live.